A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on January 17, 1999. In the series Q&Q, The Religious Quest and Question, entitled The Question, Q&Q, Not Q&A. The texts for the sermon are Job 23, verses 1 through 10, and Luke 4, verses 1 through 13. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
In our Epiphany reflections this season, we are considering the religious quest. And the religious quest in terms of quest and question. Quest and question, not question and answer. As the title of this message points out, it's Q&Q, not Q&A. The logo or the identifying mark of the Center for Religion and Life that we are constituting here in order to think deeply about the ultimate questions of life, of the religious questions as they impinge upon the fullness of human life. And it's Q&Q, not Q&A. And that's a word that needs some explanation, because traditionally the church has been in the category of Q&A. There is a human question. Our existence is a question. We live with the mystery of human existence. There are deep questions that obtrude themselves upon us. And the church, institutionalized religion, not only the Christian religion, but institutionalized religion, has majored in the answer. It has acknowledged the question and provided the answer. If that were not the case, there would never have been the institutionalizing of any of the great religions. For religions begin in a founding experience. Perhaps it's a person, an epiphany, a bush burning but not consumed. Or perhaps it's in the life of a person we look upon Jesus and say, "My God." There is a founding experience, whether it be Jesus or Moses or Buddha or Muhammad. There is an epiphany, a revelation, an unveiling, and that revelation and that vision is shared. And if indeed it addresses the deep question, if it connects with human experience, then a people is gathered and a structure is formed, and there is the development of a teaching and a ritual by which devotion is offered, and a path of life by which one may live, so that a religion, if it ever becomes institutionalized, is a reflection of the fact that there was an authentic experience. There was a vision, an epiphany moment, and that got translated. A painting was painted, or a story was told, a ritual was woven, a way of life was created, a tradition formed, and a people shaped. And we have the great religious traditions of the world only because to the question, which is our human existence, we heard an answer. And that answer provided that needed, desired security for the human person, provided a life map, a human orientation, a way to live with some sense of meaning and purpose, understanding who one is, all of those deep questions. The great religions are great religions. They are institutionalized because an epiphany moment was proven authentic and connected with the human experience and satisfied the longing for certainty and understanding in the human heart. Because to be human is to live with questions. Last week we said it is to be on a quest. That quest is the result of the questions that reside deeply within us. The ultimate questions of life. So then, the church is the consequence of a successful Q&A. Well, who would be wild enough then intentionally to constitute a center and to shape a congregation not in terms of Q and A, but Q and Q? I would. That's what this Epiphany series is all about. And let me explain. The questions are deep questions, and they are endemic to our human being. Questions, who am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going? Why is there evil, suffering, tragedy? What is the meaning and purpose of my human existence? And is this all there is? These questions, they dog us. And it is these questions that religion responds to, because to ask those questions is to ask the religious question, questions of meaning and purpose, those deeper questions that cannot be solved by a mathematical formula or the scientific method. They are the questions of the human heart and the human soul. And those questions seek answers. But it is the nature of our human existence that no answers can ever be given finally. That being human is to live in the stream of history, to be moving constantly into the future, uncharted. And every answer is a tentative and provisional answer. Every solution is a provisional solution. We have institutions of religion because an epiphany moment eventuated in connecting with human experience and providing an answer, a security, and a certainty, a meaning. But history moves on, and it is inevitable that that picture that was painted, that story that was told, that ritual that was shaped, will eventually move beyond the capacity to encompass the whole of the human experience as it expands, as history unfolds and the cosmos develops. And eventually we'll get into moments of human history and our human experience in which we'll have questions for which the old system simply is not adequate. And at that point we'll thrash about looking for some way to come to terms with a new situation. Peter Berger is a Lutheran sociologist of religion. He is perhaps the patriarch of that whole discipline. I don't know, but he's been very popular for very long, very astute. And he wrote an article which I mentioned a few weeks ago, an article in the Christian Century entitled "The Protestant Quest for Certainty," in which he reflected on our current social situation, the situation in which we are all involved. And his point was that it is a situation of pluralism. Previous generations grew, were born into communities, grew within traditions, took most of the ultimate questions of life, the answers to the ultimate questions of life for granted. People lived a life in a routine and in a measure which was taken for granted. It was according to conventional wisdom. Everybody knew it. Everybody understood it. There wasn't any question about it. Communities were very solid and very uniform and homogeneous. And those ultimate questions had answers that everyone knew. Pat answers, if you will. Now, they worked. But that's not the way the world is anymore. That's not good or bad, it's just true. And as Berger points out, we are people today who, faced with a question, the ultimate issues of our human existence, no longer have a take it for granted, not to be questioned, conventional answer. We have options. We are aware of other people facing that question or that situation who have answered it differently or responded to it differently. We know that there are other ways to go. There are choices we make. We understand today that there is a multiform possibility open to us. And with the emergence of that pluralistic situation, with the possibility of a variety of choices and a diversity of responses, certainty is undercut. As John Dewey pointed out a long time ago, there is in the human heart a quest for certainty. As Charles Davis says in his book, The Temptations of Religion, many of us are marked by the lust for certitude. It is just human. It is just normal and natural. A place to stand. A way to be. A life map that works. But we know that we have choices and that it is not obvious which choice we'll make. And in such a situation, certainty is undercut. And therefore, we may feel at sixes and sevens, we may feel that the foundations shake, that it is not possible to live with that taken-for-granted old security within a system in which everyone knew, of course, that's the way things are. Now, in a time like that, in a world like that, which is our world, a sociologist doesn't go into an ivory tower and create a story, and a sociologist looks around, looks at people, looks at institutions, studies what's happening in society, and then tells us about it. It's a kind of a phenomenological approach. This is the way things are. Doesn't say it's good or it's bad. It's just the way things are. That's the life we're living. That is the kind of situation in human society in which I suggest that it is necessary to have a community like this marked by Q and Q, rather than Q&A, that we honor the deep questions of our existence. And in the quest which we are on, inevitably, because we are human, in the changing landscapes that pass by because we are in movement, that we come to terms with the fact that every answer is tentative, and every solution is provisional, just because that's what it means to be human. It is a situation of an ongoing quest, stimulated by old questions and new, that push us to critical examination in order to come to an understanding of our day, of our lives, of the meaning and purpose of it all. And that's where we are. How do you find your way? Where do you find that security for which your heart yearns? How do you have a place to stand in this moving stream of life? Well, interestingly, Peter Berger suggests that It is precisely the Protestant principle that we never absolutize any structure or any formula, but rather we live by faith. Heard that before? But it is precisely that which is open to us, and only that which is open to us, if we are honest with our human dilemma, which is to be ever-moving, living questions in the face of an ultimate mystery. To live by faith. That is, a faith in the ground of it all, in the graciousness of the ultimate mystery of life. To live on this journey with confidence and trust as a matter of choice in that God who here and there, now and again, becomes manifest. John Dominic Crossan, who's coming to us in a few weeks, makes a nice distinction, speaking of God. The difference between an episodic God and an epiphanic God. An episodic God is a divine intruder, the God of intervention, the God who is out there who must come in order to create for us a miracle. An episodic God from episode. There are episodes that we can relate. Ah, God was with me there. But an epiphanic God is a God that is laced into everything, permeating everything, present at all times to everything. And now and again, here and there, we have an epiphany moment, and our eyes are open to see what was always there, but we never noticed. Or there is the intensity of divine luminosity in this person or that event. And we say, ah, there, that which is always true. Now I experience in this moment of epiphany, the epiphanic God is at all times everywhere present. The mystery of our being. But it is only now and again, when we have eyes to see or ears to hear, that which is everywhere always true becomes luminous in my experience. And out of that luminous experience, I draw that strength and confidence to go on even when the way is through a barren wilderness or a deep valley. Fascinating discussion going on today between, for example, Peter Berger with this suggestion that it is the Protestant principle that there is no absolutizing of answers or structures or forms, but rather a living by faith in that which is ongoing in its provisionalness. Over against his old friend, Richard John Newhouse, who is the editor-in-chief of First Things, a very intellectual journal. Newhouse was in Muskegon over a year ago talking with David Hartman about some of these things. Newhouse was a Lutheran pastor operating on the Protestant principle, and he became now a Catholic priest. Peter Berger says, in the search for security, we have at least three options. We can flee to an infallible institution. Newhouse flees to Rome. Or we can flee to an infallible text, the fundamentalism of the Bible. Or we can flee to the infallibility of religious experience, the Pentecostal phenomenon. But in every case, we are denying something. We are not facing something. And with the critical facility of our day, institutional critique and biblical critique and psychological, emotional, spiritual critique reveals to us that we're only seeing part of the picture and blocking out so much. So what if with clear-eyed intensity we face the human existence experience with its questions? Then we know the nature of our life is Q&Q. It is ongoing quest because there are ever new questions. And those old questions, those deep questions, keep coming up in new ways, in new situations. And so we are pilgrim people. We are people on a quest, seeking to find answers to the questions, but knowing that any answer we find is a temporary resting place until there is new light, new understanding, new evidence, new data. And where that will lead us, we really don't know. And actually, as I said, institutional religion has served a wonderful purpose. No epiphany moment could ever be passed on except through the forms and structures, liturgies and creeds of an institution. But the institution soon loses the fire and the vision of the moment. Constantly, prematurely brings closure to the quest and denies the question, and because it becomes an end in itself. But in the Bible itself, we can see that to be human is to be wrestling and struggling. That's what Job is in the Bible all about. Job is a drama, it's a poem, it's an epic. It's about real life. Job was suffering intolerably. And the conventional wisdom of the day said, confess your sin, because no one suffers like that who has not done grave wrong. Job said, no. They said, absolutely. Job says, no, I am not suffering because I have sinned. I don't know why I'm suffering. I have nothing to confess. My life is absolutely bruised and broken, but I don't know why. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. Oh, that I might lay my course, my cause before him. I go forward and he's not there. I go to the right hand and he's not there. And the left hand, he's not there. I go backward and he is not there. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. If only I could get my case out, I would be vindicated. I do not accept the conventional wisdom of you, my miserable comforters. There is something wrong with your theology. There's something wrong with your religion. And it wasn't easy for Jesus either. The story of that wilderness experience must be a reflection of the fact that Jesus had to battle his way to his own sense of identity, who he was, what he was to do, how he was to do it, just as well as any one of us. Struggling, asking the ultimate questions, and didn't he die with a question? An awful, blood-curdling question? According to the gospel portrait, my God, why? Through thy hands I commend my spirit. You see the tension between the awfulness of the abyss and the determination to trust in the darkness, nevertheless. That's an honest mirror of the human situation. It's Q and Q, friends, not Q and A. What do you say to Marvin DeYoung, who's on the eve of the day of the funeral of his beloved Wilma, when he gets a call that his 44-year-old son has died too? What I said to him last night was, Marvin, I've been your pastor a long time, and I've never promised you anything. And I can stand at your bedside or at your coffin, every one of you, knowing that in the integrity of my heart, I've been as honest as I can with you, asking the questions with you, on the quest with you. And how do you stand? How does a Marvin stand? In the darkness, being surrounded by a community like this, that doesn't feel compelled to explain anything, but holds him and weeps with him and awaits tomorrow.